So how is everybody living? What's going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. And as I am every single day at this time, I am live. I'm in Southern California, and I am hyped to be here. Today's program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. A tremendous Tuesday to you. All right, so the show sets up like this. I've got a couple of segments where I can open it up. If you want to get in, do it now. You don't need to wait. 1-800-636-8686. Before you get to me, you've got to get through Adam Hawk. He ran a half marathon. He's back in his spot. 1-800-636-8686. Make sure you know what you want to talk about before you make that call. He's going to ask you. Have a take. Don't suck. Bring something to it. Ask not what I can do for you. Do something for the jungle. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E. Have a take.com. All right, so three interviews for you. Coming up later on this hour, UFC light heavyweight fighter Chris Weidman. That's coming up at 40 past. In hour number two, we are talking Seattle Seahawks football. Jerron Brown, a wide receiver for the Hawks, joins us. That's coming up at 10:20. In fact, I think we'll go back-to-back next hour. Jerron Brown and then Lonto Griffin, PGA Tour golfer. Winner of the Houston Open. So we are front loading. All three interviews coming up in the first half of the program. Your phone lines are open. What do you want to hit on? Now, there's an awful lot coming off last night in sports where I could start. So many stars. Lots of alphas last night. Aaron Rodgers, Alan Lazard, Matt Stafford, Kenny Golladay, Steven Strasburg, Anthony Rendon. I could start with any one of these guys. But you know where I have to start, right? One name comes to mind. Cleet Blakeman. Please give it up for Cleet. On a night where the NLCS is happening, and that's going up against a primetime battle for first place in the NFC North, you have to be pretty special to rip the spotlight from all of that. And Cleet Blakeman and his crew did just that. You see, Cleet Blakeman does not just have one of the better names on the planet. He and his officiating crew are absolute stars. Bona fide stars. Just ask them. Because last night was not about the Lions and the Packers. Last night was about the refs. I mean, seriously. I know I touched on this yesterday. I know I mentioned it in passing about how bad the officiating has been this season. However, old Cleet and his crew went next level with it last night. Because throughout the season, the problem has been too many calls, too many flags, too much of the officials. Except last night was truly the breaking point. This truly is broken now. Because Blakeman and his crew went from officiating that game to ruining the game. I mean, I would love to start today's program by leading with Aaron Rodgers and talking about that fourth quarter drive. Or Alan Lazard busting onto the scene. Except the officials were the story last night. And the league now officially has a crisis on its hands. Seriously. I mean, complaining about the officiating is one of the dumbest, laziest, most tired things ever. Or so I thought before last night. Because now I can't decide if the officials last night were dumb, lazy, or tired. I just know this. They were absolute garbage. Now, I'm not going to break down every single call they did or didn't make, but here are a few of the highlights. Starting with Lions DB Tracy Walker being called for that helmet-to-helmet hit when he was diving to make a play, diving to catch a pass. I mean, I know he made contact with Geronimo Allison, but what else was this guy supposed to do? He was trying to make a play on the ball. Walker himself did not exactly understand that call. He said, quote, "extremely pissed off right now. It is what it is. Disappointed. Hurt. We had that game. It's going. I'm going to say the same bleep. We should have won it. It is what it is, though. Got to bounce back." End quote. And if that's not good enough for you, he also had this to say.
"Right now, from what I just saw, honestly, I'm just going off of bad calls right now. I feel like we left plays out there, and there was just some bad calls out there left out.
It seems like that's been a theme across the NFL.
Detroit versus everybody.
I wasn't even saying Detroit.
I'm saying Detroit versus everybody. It's awful."
All right, so he made that pretty clear. He's not happy about that. Detroit versus everybody. But there's more. Lions defensive lineman Trey Flowers getting called for illegal hands to the face on third down early in the fourth quarter. That call kept the drive alive for the Packers. They scored. That cut into Detroit's lead. And then there was the same Trey Flowers getting called for illegal hands to the face again late in the fourth quarter. That penalty kept a drive alive for the Packers. They went on to score and win the game. Flowers still cannot figure out what happened.
I thought hands to the face, but I had him right here in the chest. Second time I changed him to right here. That's part of a move that I do. So nah, I don't think they're coming. They did. So.
All right, so what he's saying is, I understand hands to the face, but since when is hands to the chest a penalty?
Lions send four. Rodgers back, sets the pocket. Pressure comes behind. Gonna get hit. Gonna get sacked. Back inside the 45-yard line with a flag down.
Trey Flowers seems to be in disbelief.
Illegal use of hands. Hands to the face. Oh. Defense. Number 90. Oh. 5-yard penalty from the previous spot. First down, Green Bay.
What? Gotta be kidding. Trey Flowers working against Bakhtiari. That's terrible.
Yeah.
He's got his hand not in his face. His hand is engaged with his chest. That's terrible.
Hands to the chest. Lions radio on that call. Illegal use of the hands. Hands to the chest. Hey, so we're clear on this. Flowers is in his fourth full season. According to ESPN, he's never been called for illegal hands to the face before, but then gets called for it twice in the fourth quarter.
It's two for me.
It's two for Trey. Twice in the fourth quarter. And neither one was a good call. They were both terrible, just as pretty much everything else was that the refs did last night. Then there was that play in the second quarter when the Packers were lining up for a field goal and the Lions had 12 men on the field. The officials got that right. Good for them. Then on the next possession, the Packers had 13 men on the field and the officials did not flag that. And to make matters worse, this is one of those games where all the bad calls seem to go in one direction. Normally, I'm not a big fan of complaining about the refs because the law of averages would suggest that those bad calls even out. But they didn't last night. And here's the other thing. We don't need to be having all these terrible calls. There are solutions available. And don't look at me to come up with them. It's not my job to come up with them. The league is a multi-billion dollar operation. But the officiating looks like it's being done by amateurs. Normally, the officiating issues are about too many holding calls, never overturning PI calls, but Cleat and company found all new areas of incompetence to explore. I mean, this got so bad. It got so bad, even Barry Sanders was reaching for his phone. Barry Sanders jumped on Twitter, quote, "I know that no one on the Lions can say it, so I will. That is a terrible miscall on hands to the face and a bad break for our D that is playing so hard. Hashtag replay help needed." Man, that is such a problem. That is a huge problem. If the league is serious about the game and the integrity of the game, and I'm not even going to get into the gambling ramifications of all this. I'm not even going to go there. But if they're serious about the integrity of the game, they need to do something stat. Because this is now a joke. This is now an embarrassment. And I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again right now. If this is how this is going to go, man, bring back the replacement refs. I mean, sure, they were out-and-out goofballs, and they were terrible. But damn it, they were our goofballs. They were a joke and an embarrassment and emblematic of the league's greed. But at least they were memorable. Who will ever forget the Fail Mary, complete with Golden Tate shoving the hell out of Sam Shields, followed by Tate and MD Jennings coming down with the ball at the same time, and one ref ruling a touchdown and the other ref ruling it incomplete? And who will ever forget that same ref showing up at a club in Fresno 24 hours later and taking photos with Packer fans? You can't tell me that's not an iconic moment. Problem is, last night we had lots of moments. None of them were iconic. This is week six. So we are well past the time where the refs are just working out the kinks or getting into the rhythm of the season or focusing on new points of emphasis. I'm going to break one of my most valued rules, one of my core principles, and I'm just going to say it. They're way past that. Way past new points of emphasis. Now they just suck. Too many mistakes are being made. These are mistakes that can lead to players being cut, coaches getting fired, front office personnel being fired, and these guys making or missing these calls really do not have to answer to anybody. They don't need to explain their mistakes, and they don't need to answer to anyone. And speaking of explaining things, one more point I want to make. You notice how there's like a rules expert on every single broadcast? To me, that's not a solution. That's a part of the problem. The fact that the rule book and the way your guys are calling the game is so jacked up that you have to have an extra person available for every game to explain what the refs are doing, to me, is a huge issue. The rules expert is not a cool broadcasting technique. The rules expert is a major issue. Because the traditional football broadcast is the announcer who tells you what the players are doing. And then the analyst who tells you why the players are doing it. But now you've got some third dude who has to tell you why the officials are doing what they're doing. And a lot of time that rules expert's just up in the booth, just shrugging his shoulders. And also, do not come in here and tell me the cameras are better, the TVs at home are better, and that's why people are seeing things better than the refs. All right, great. The technology's there. We have it. How come they don't? If that's the case, use the technology. Go to a sky judge, which, by the way, is a horrible term. If I can spot what should and should not be a penalty from my living room, let me do it. I will volunteer as tribute.
I volunteer as tribute.
I will volunteer as tribute. If I've got a better view and a better vantage point from my couch, let me officiate it. I mean, seriously. I mean, maybe not me because I'm pretty busy. But if your argument is that the refs get unfairly criticized because the TV audience has a better view, then give the refs the better view. Have an extra official working the game who's watching on monitors and can immediately jump into the ear of the crew when they huddle and tell them they're wrong. No, you know what? I got a better idea. Better yet, have a central place where there are hundreds of TV monitors where really good officials can monitor every game. Oh, wait. They already have that. And it still hasn't made anything better. So here's your number one piece of advice. From me to you, from me to the NFL, on officiating. Here it is. You ready? Get better. Do better. Do better. Got a major problem. There are numerous solutions. Do something. Bleeping do something. Because burying your head in the sand and rolling out these same crews to butcher these same games is killing the game. It is. I mean, Barry Sanders? He's tweeting his frustration about the refs. Barry freaking Sanders, a man who never said a word while playing a decade on horrible teams, who never had a shot at winning, is now livid. Man, you got a problem, Shield. Fix it before your fans pull up Barry themselves and just walk away from the game. A game they love. 1-800-636-8686. I did not want to have to do that. I did not want to start with the officiating, and I had no choice. I do have thoughts on the game itself, the Packers and the Lions, and where that game leaves both of them. We will get into that. NLCS and ALCS. How about the Nationals? The Nationals went from perennial postseason chumps to one win from being in the World Series. Amazing transformation, which I will get to a little bit later on. Chris Weidman coming up this hour. Next hour, Jerron Brown of the Seahawks. Lonto Griffin, a PGA Tour pro who won the Houston Open, also is coming up next hour. And here he comes, rocking a porn stash on his face. He is Adam Hawk. Thanks, dude. This email reads, hey, Rome, make no mistake. 5 field goals most likely lost that game, but the officiating at the end was putrid. I'm a first-generation Lions fan and recently married. I am scared for my children. No, you're right about that. the fact that they were settling for field goals had as much to do with them losing that game as the officials, which I will get to later on. But the officiating is a major issue now. Major issue. Dear Snaglio, it's like those refs can't see what we're seeing. Are they blind or just stupid? Signed, Hawk, selecting pants. Casey in New Hampshire. Wore Ben Button Ritt, looking younger than he did yesterday. Maybe he moisturized. I don't know.
It's lit!
What's up, bro? You run into a little Nivea? Anyway, we had a big day yesterday. It was my birthday. It was Ritt's birthday. Ritt looks exactly like Dwight Eisenhower, and it was Dwight Eisenhower's birthday. As I said yesterday, as weird as that is, if I could just find somebody who looks like John Wooden, I would hire him. And then we'd have two people on staff who had the same birthday as me and as their doppelganger celebrity lookalikes. Submit your picks if you want. All right, we are coming right back. Chris Weidman coming up later on this hour. So what do you want when you're craving protein or you need some more energy? Let me answer it this way. I will tell you what you do not want. You don't want a bar. You do not want a sugary snack. You don't want an energy drink. What you want is beef, pure and simple. So where is the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Pop's jerky was shriveled up, dry, tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. And Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four great flavors to satisfy all your cravings, and it's quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go. Look for it in the Clearview bag. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky company comes close. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Quick reminder, Sunday, the NFL on CBS is at Lambeau. The Packers host the Raiders. Plus a key AFC South clash between Houston and Indy. It all begins with JB and the fellas getting you ready for all the action on the NFL today at noon Eastern and 9 Pacific on CBS. Good matchups. Chris Weidman's coming up next segment, and your phone lines are open right now. This email reads, Rome, the officiating last night was horrible. Signed, the racing officials who allowed Byron to get away with fouling, costing shared belief the race and horse of the year. Not only that, but a Hall of Fame bid, too, I would argue. He should be anyway. Anyway, that happened then. We're talking about the officiating right now.
Bad call.
I mean, as I mentioned in the open, this is a real problem that needs to be fixed stat. Like I said, at least bring back the replacement refs. That was at least fun. What's happening right now is not fun. It's not iconic. It's not funny. It's not entertaining. Now, those morons, that was fun.
After further review, the play stands as called.
This one may get reversed.
First and 10, first and 10, Atlanta on the 36.
There's some confusion on the field.
12 men in the huddle, 5-year friendly.
How can the kicking team block in the back?
We also have a dead ball, personal foul, number 93, red.
Don't understand that one.
Red. St. Louis gets the ball.
The clock was not running. They were not charged with that timeout.
That's not true, Sam. That's not true.
You can't make this stuff up.
Wilford took his helmet off and went screaming right for the official.
Oh, boy. Well, that's a few bucks.
Never meant any disrespect or be disrespectful to the officials.
One guy goes up, touchdown. The other said no time.
How does MD Jennings not get credit for the intercept?
How can they take that away?
Call on the field stands. Touchdown.
Touchdown.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
Good times, right? Bring them back. Because the guys they have right now are almost that incompetent. And at least those replacement refs were a blast. This guy's in a club in Fresno partying with Packer fans. How about that one dude taking pictures with Raider fan? These are good times, man.
Atlanta.
Do something. Fix it. Remember when they allowed PI to be reviewed? Something had to be done, right? After the Saints-Rams game. So they allow pass interference to be reviewed, and then they review it, and they don't overturn it. It's made it so much worse. They've created an absolute monster with that. It's gotten so much worse. If you allow for review an incorrect call, and then you don't correct it, people are going to think the entire proceedings are garbage. And it is.
Garbage.
What's the rule there for if you're not going to overturn the call? This says, hey, Rome, saying something sucks is not a take. But I mean, damn, these refs are so bad. It's hard enough watching my team's game with the way the refs slow down the game. But I watch the Red Zone channel and I see other games around the league on Sundays and it's absolutely brutal. The refs literally called 6 penalties in a row during that Cowboys game on Sunday. Then watching last night's game was unbearable. The NFL is so freaking lucky people like me have money running on the games. Or have money running on a daily fantasy site where we have to watch those games or else nobody would watch this crap anymore. Matt in Poland Springs. This guy literally just said the only reason I watch the games is because I've got money on the games. And as I said in the open, I'm not even going to get into the gambling implications of all this. If you're only watching the games because you have money on the games, but then you don't trust the refereeing, how long before you take your money away from the games and then you don't watch the games at all? Hey, Jim, big fan of cleat. In fact, I use them to stomp all over my playing partner's putting line. Thanks. Signed, Phil Mickelson. We had Drew in West LA. Drew! I didn't know you had that gear, bro. I didn't know you had that tool in your toolbox, Drew.
Let's keep it real.
Yeah, Drew, you got to swing that club a little more often. I didn't know you had that bat in your bag.
You know, toughen up.
1-800-636-8686. How about a quick phone call before I go to break? Let's go to Wisconsin. Matt in Wisco. Good to have you, Matt. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Jim?
Good. Great.
Good. Hey, happy belated birthday. But
thank you.
You know, as a Packer fan, got to say that, you know, the victory was great last night. But know how the Lions feel. We've had our share of calls go against us, and the whole notion of, you know, these things even themselves out. I don't buy that. I don't want them to even themselves out. I want them to be done right. And when the NFL started making all these rules and legislating everything for safety, which I get, they opened up a can, and you just can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. It's going to where I don't enjoy watching the games anymore, and I really don't know how they're going to fix it, Jim.
Actually, that's well said. How do they fix it? It's not your problem. It's not even my problem. Fix it. Fix it. Do something. Do something stat. He just said what a lot of people are thinking, and a lot of people are saying, quote, I don't even enjoy watching the games anymore. It's true. We're not watching the same thing. And there are times when it really is unwatchable. I mean, it's one thing to constantly have flags come flying and to slow the play and to just put the brakes on the entire thing. But it's another to keep butchering call after call after call. Once again, they had to do something after what happened between the Saints and the Rams. So they allow PI to be reviewed. All right, fine. But if you're going to allow for it to be reviewed, make sure you overturn it when it's very apparent to everybody that it needs to be overturned. The fact that they're not doing it has made it so much worse. So much worse. And as I also said in the open, these things tend to work themselves out, or they tend to balance themselves out. Not last night. It was really one-sided last night. All right, when we come back, I've got time for your phone calls, but talk some MMA. UFC light heavyweight fighter Chris Weidman joins me next. He's got a big fight coming up. Jerron Brown of the Seahawks, next hour. Lonto Griffin, also next hour. And right now, I've got a bottom of the hour sports update for you. Here it is.
Live from Southern California,
This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Good to be with you on this Tuesday. In fact, great to be with you. More of your telephone calls coming up momentarily. Let me change up. We are joined right now by a UFC light heavyweight. He is the former UFC middleweight champ, 14-4, a two-time NCAA Division I All-American. He holds wins over former UFC champions Anderson Silva, twice in fact, Lyoto Machida, and Vitor Belfort. UFC Fight Night on ESPN. Reyes v. Weidman, Saturday. It is live from Boston. Chris Weidman is my guest. Chris, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So there's a lot to talk about, but before we get into any of the details, you posted on Instagram the other day you had your last hard workout of training camp. How was that workout, and how has the camp been overall?
Yeah, camp has been amazing. You know, I'm going up a weight class for the first time, and so I'm not cutting weight for the first time, and so my body just stayed super healthy. That was one of the main reasons why I had to move up in weight, but my body was just kind of falling apart, cutting all the weight. So I feel so much better. And the last workout, we did something called a puke drill, where you go from wrestling two different guys. So you wrestle one guy for 30 seconds to a minute, and then you go to hitting pads hard, and then you go back to wrestling a fresh guy for 30 seconds to a minute, back to the pads, and then you do that for five-minute rounds. And it was a great workout, no injuries, which is always the most important. I, like, pushed a great pace, and I feel amazing. Camp has been great.
Chris Weidman joining us. You know, I would imagine, so your body feels great, but, like, what does that do to you mentally? How does your mind feel? In other words, when you don't have to make a big cut, how much stress does that add to the camp? When you don't have to do it, are you able to focus more on your technique and your training?
Yeah, and you also just get to, like, chill out more and put your mind somewhere else, you know, because I was always so focused on my weight and staying disciplined with meals. And then there you do something called water loading once you get closer to the fight, where you start, you know, taking tons of water with no sodium. You can't have any sodium in any of your meals, and then you start bringing down the water slowly, and then, you know, your weight starts falling off. But then you got to do, like, two hard cuts where you're doing, like, 7-8 pounds each weight cut, and it really, like, would break it down mentally and physically. And I was always positive about when I was doing it, because otherwise it would really suck. But now not doing it, it makes me really realize, like, wow, this is amazing. I'm going in there feeling fresh. My mind is fresh. I feel like a new guy right now.
We're talking to Chris Weidman. All right, so at the top, I mentioned a number of the guys you've beaten in your career. You have been a champion. You have beaten Anderson Silva twice. I could argue that you've accomplished pretty much everything there is to accomplish in that sport. So what keeps you motivated, and what keeps you going?
You know, I think at middleweight, I think I accomplished everything I kind of wanted. And I think that was some of the problems. You know, I won the belt. I defended three times. And then the goal, once I lost, was like, all right, I just want to win the belt back and hold the belt longer. And I just kind of wasn't super excited about that, because it's something I already had. But to go up a weight class and to know that I could be a champion up a weight class, but not only that, beat one of the other guys that everybody thinks is the greatest of all time, John Jones, is something that really excites me. I love to have all that doubt and people to look at me, you know, and twist their head and think I have no chance, because that's what I was getting before I fought Anderson Silva as well. And so obviously, first thing is first, I got to make my statement at the weight class and go out there and do my thing against Dominic Reyes. But to have the opportunity to have a guy in the weight that everybody thinks is unbeatable is what really, you know, it creates a super exciting goal for me.
Chris Weidman joining us. I'm going to go back to Reyes in a minute, but since you mentioned John Jones, what about that? Because that's going to come up in every single interview. As you're fighting light heavyweight right now, there's already been some talk about the two of you maybe fighting at some point. So when you think of Jones, when you look at Jones right now, what are your thoughts?
He's kind of looked lackluster in his last couple of fights. He's failed a bunch of drug tests. You know, it's questionable. You know, is he a cheater, not a cheater? I think there's an asterisk on his career. He's obviously very well rounded. He adjusts very well. But I don't think he hasn't gone against a guy with me who's as well rounded and who could, you know, bring pressure, a pace, not get tired with wrestling and jujitsu. And, I just think I have the tools to beat him. I always thought that. I mean, the goal for me was always to fight middleweight, win the belt a bunch of times, go up to 205 and beat John Jones. That was always the goal. It didn't work out exactly the way I wanted, but here I am at 205, and I have the opportunity and the abilities to make it happen. So I feel great about that.
We're talking to Chris Weidman. See, that's the thing, right? You're moving up, but it's not like you're kind of easing your way into the light heavyweight division. You're going to come in and fight Reyes right out of the gate. He's undefeated. He's the number four fighter in that division. So what kind of thoughts do you have when you watch him fight, and what concerns you the most about his style?
He's a tough dude. He's hungry. He's undefeated. And he's got good footwork. He hits pretty hard. He has good kicks, southpaw, long. But he hasn't faced anybody he hasn't even faced really a wrestler yet. He was taken down four times in his last fight against a guy who was a striker. And so it's a different animal, not just like if I take him down and he has to worry about submissions and ground and pound. It's a different animal because on the feet, he's going to have to worry about the possibility of me taking him down. So it kind of ruins his whole stand-up game, too. It's going to really throw a curveball in there that he hasn't had to deal with. It's a lot different to multitask all those thoughts. So I think that's going to be the problem for him.
So let me ask you this. When you're fighting a guy who is undefeated, is there an argument to be made that he really has not been tested and that if you can get him into deep water, he's not going to know what to do?
My goal is to drag him into deep water and drown his ass. There's no question about it. That's the goal. I'm bringing him to that spot, you know, where it's either sink or swim, and I'm not going to give him a way out. So, and I've been in these positions. I love being uncomfortable and tired and pushing harder than the other guy, and he hasn't been there yet. So I'm excited to introduce him to that.
Chris Weidman joining us. You know, that mantra is either you win or you learn. Like, when you look at some of the fights that did not go the way you would have hoped, what have you learned from them?
Oh, I learned a lot. I mean, each fight was so different that I lost, and it was different things I learned from each one of them. Technically, in the actual fight, preparation-wise, mentally, where I was at, and you kind of figure yourself out. You learn. I became undefeated world champion at 9-0. I beat Anderson Silva and I defended my belt, you know, three times, and I was undefeated, you know, world champion. And I didn't think I was ever going to lose. And I didn't have those lessons yet. Now from losing, I feel like I got so much better and I learned so much more about myself and learned what makes me great. And now I just, especially going up a weight class now, I just have a whole new outlook on who I am and what I want and how I get there.
Chris Weidman joining me for a few more moments. You know, you mentioned that change. So when you go to light heavyweight, what about your approach? Does the approach change, or do you do what you've done at middleweight, and will that work at light heavyweight?
I feel like every fight was different for me, even at middleweight. You know, it wasn't always the same exact, you know, strategy. But in this fight, I think the main thing is that I just, no matter what happens in there, I don't, you know, I miss a takedown, I miss two takedowns, I miss three takedowns, I don't stop. I just keep coming forward. I throw heavy hands. I get to my shots. On top, I look for control, then I look for submissions. And that's really like the basis of what I do, no matter who I fight. And so that's not going to change.
So
the only thing that really changes is that, like, the guys at 205 get more tired than the guys at 85.
Huh.
You know, so I'm excited to exploit that and bring a pace that won't stop in that weight.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to say, you had an interesting point recently when you were talking to Ariel Helwani about training to fight for five rounds, and that training for five rounds is actually worse than fighting five rounds. Lay that out for me. What is it? What's training for five rounds like, and why is that worse than actually fighting five rounds?
Yeah, because, I mean, everything is double. Everything's pretty much double what you're used to. So you're used to sparring for 3 5-minute rounds. And at the end of it, you're exhausted. You're laying out. You're drinking water. You know, you're dead. And then all of a sudden, you're fighting for five rounds. And somehow you have to find your way off the floor, get back up, drink water, and go right back up, right back out there, you know, in a minute. And then you got to do that again in the fifth. And so it's a mental it's kind of messes with you mentally a little bit, and then also physically, kind of got to reprogram your mind into like what level and what limits your body could get to. And so there's more chances of injuries. There's just, you know, you're training double what you're used to, you know, if you're not used to it. So there's a lot of curveballs with that. And yeah.
It is a big fight coming up on Saturday. He is a light heavyweight now. He is the former UFC middleweight champ, two-time NCAA Division I All-American, and that fight is Reyes v. Weidman Saturday. It is UFC Fight Night on ESPN. It's live from Boston. Chris, you do what you always do. You came in, you crushed it. Really appreciate that. Thanks so much, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Jim.
Great talking to you, Chris. Thank you. Always look forward to that one. And now you know why I always look forward to that one. He is really interesting. Really confident, really aggressive, really interesting. He's always had that confidence and said, now it's great. I don't have to deal with that weight cut. And it changed the camp. It changes everything mentally and physically. And the way he laid out what he had to go through to make weight and to cut weight, man, you can see where that would take a hell of a lot out of you for every single camp. Now you go in there and you focus on your training and your technique, and you're not so consumed by weight. What do I have to do to make that weight? So he's going to move up. Reyes v. Weidman, Saturday night. And, of course, you've got the specter of John Jones. That's always going to be there. When you're talking light heavyweights, you're talking John Jones. And Weidman just said it. Man, that's the plan. I'm going to come up here, move up, take care of my business, and get my shot at that guy. Another excellent UFC interview. Chris Weidman. This email reads, Rome, I don't know about you, but things are really looking up for the NFL officials. Seriously, their effort and performance look very promising. Regards, water pressure in hotel showers. Mitch from Buffalo. Unwore the Bills going 12-4 and having to play at 8-8 Cleveland or Baltimore in the wild card playoffs. So is that something you always think of? The water pressure in hotels? Honestly, I only think about it sometimes in New York. Otherwise, and I haven't had an issue. Because I stay at a great hotel in New York. But that's the only time I've ever thought about that. How about that guy who called up earlier in the hour and said, man, I don't even like watching the NFL anymore. See, you're telling me that you no longer want to watch your favorite thing ever. Not even like, man, baseball. Baseball is so boring. It's so slow. It's unwatchable. I can't watch that game. No, people are saying that about the NFL now. I can't watch the NFL. Wait, you mean that thing that you live for every single day of your life? That thing that if your team wins on Sunday, your life is good, and if your team loses on Sunday, your life sucks? That thing? You don't want to watch that anymore. This is why the NFL has got an issue. When people, and that's not a one-off either, when people are calling the show, going to Twitter and saying things like, I can't even watch it anymore. I don't even want to watch it anymore. They're saying they can't partake in their favorite thing ever, and it's because of the officials? Fix it. Get it right. This one's a little long form. Rome, remember the good old days when NFL football was fun to watch and talk about? When every play did not need to be put under a microscope? When every network didn't need to have an ex-official on standby to break down reviews and calls? When we knew what a catch was? And what a penalty was. Remember those days. This new version of the NFL is getting hard to watch. I've always been of the opinion that if you play well enough, then the bad calls won't make a difference in the outcome of the games. It's getting tougher to say that. This morning, every show and every fan is talking about the missed calls and the calls that were made that should not have been made. Facebook and Twitter is filled with screenshots of last night's Lions-Packers game, pointing out where the refs got it wrong. It would be nice to see a game that does not stop every 5 minutes for a penalty, a challenge, a review. It would be nice to be able to talk about a game and for it to be about the actual game and not the calls. Jamie in Green Bay, that is such a good email. And that's from somebody who's a Packer fan and they won. He's right. He's exactly right. I would have loved to have started the program by talking about Green Bay being 5-1 and Aaron Rodgers going down the field again late to lead them to a win. But I couldn't, because the officials will not let me. Hour number two, straight ahead.